Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. The Dakota Political Junkies are a panel of some of the most experienced and insightful political journalists in the state. With us today is Seth Tupper, enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're also joined today by Dana Ferguson. She's a watchdog state government and political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Dana, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the governor's budget address, because obviously that was a long day for everyone yesterday. Dana, you want to give us some initial impressions of some expectations that were realized and then some surprises?
Sure. So the governor was pretty transparent yesterday about his disliking of initiated Measure 22. If you'll recall, that was a ballot measure that passed in November pretty narrowly and set up requirements, including the establishment of an ethics commission, a so-called democracy credit program that would create two $50 vouchers for certain voters that wanted them using taxpayer dollars. And so facing some shorter than expected revenues this year, Governor Dennis Stuegard got up there and he essentially bashed this measure, said that he has no plans to fund the democracy credit program, and essentially gave lawmakers an ultimatum and said, you know, this is going to be about $5 million in our very slim budget that we can be using for democracy credits, or we can be using that for a 1% increase to education, healthcare providers, state employee salaries, and things like that, or it's not going to be that way. And essentially, that is now up to lawmakers what they're wanting to do about it. But he was pretty clear in saying that if he were to get his way, that IM-22 would be repealed. He's hopeful that lawmakers can bring up many of those topics again, but find a way to legislate that is a little more clear and a little more not flying in the face of constitutional problems. So it was a really interesting day. I don't think about a month ago that they had a sense that that was the conversation they were going to be having with lawmakers, but definitely fun to watch on my end.
Dana, what was the governor saying about the will of voters? That must also be on his mind, because initiated Measure 22 did pass. What were his thoughts there?
He was pretty clear in saying that he didn't want to disrespect the will of voters, but thought that the way that IM-22 was portrayed wasn't the most honest. At one point he said that voters were hoodwinked by scam artists, and essentially made the campaign for IM-22 out to be one that was not straightforward with them. They didn't know the price tag it was going to carry, and he didn't seem to think that there would be too much blowback from voters about his deciding not to fund one of the key provisions of that law.
Seth Tupper from the Rapid City Journal is also with us today. Seth, I'm wondering, some of those people that the governor says hoodwinked voters are South Dakotans. Rick Weiland, Don Frankenfeld, if I recall correctly, were part of the push to pass initiated Measure 22. What do you think the repercussions of the governor's speech alone yesterday could have within the state?
Well, I think a lot of it remains to be seen with this lawsuit that has been filed over IM-22, which it sounds like will be in court tomorrow. And I suppose a lot hinges on that. You know, obviously, if in court, if IM-22 is upheld largely as is, it'll make the governor look wrong and look like he's overreacting. But if, you know, things go the way of opponents of IM-22 in court, obviously a lot of the governor's logic and reasoning and attacks will look pretty smart. You know, the people you mentioned, Don Frankenfeld, I actually had spoke to him this morning on a different issue, on a different story, but talked a little bit about it. He's got a great sense of humor, but he noted that he was called a scam artist by the governor yesterday. wasn't very appreciative of that.
And he disagrees with that characterization, I think it's safe to say, right?
Obviously, yes. And one thing the governor mentioned, you asked earlier about the will of the voters. He made a big point yesterday of saying how much out-of-state money came in on that ballot issue, and trying to characterize IM-22 as kind of something that was concocted by people on the East Coast and people from out-of-state. But obviously, as you said, there were, you know, Rick Weiland, Don Frankenfeld, others, lots of people, Rick Noby from your side of the state over there in Sioux Falls, were involved in backing this issue, too. So even though a lot of the money came from out of the state, there were a lot of in-state people interested in it. And I think it was 51% support from voters. So there is something at stake here. And like I said, I'll really be looking for the court battle to see where this all goes.
Dana, after the budget speech and the press conferences and in the hallways there in Pierre, were you able to get a feel for how lawmakers on either side of the issue responded to the sort of initiated Measure 2 sidebar?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty clearly split on party lines. Republicans were pretty united in supporting Duvard's message and wanting to repeal IM-22. I think that's very much what they've intended to do since it passed. And they also said that they do want to sit down and talk about different provisions that are in the law, find ways to bring those back. And on the opposite side, Democrats were very surprised that the governor would go so far as to just decide not to fund this measure, especially in comparison to the budget in total. It's not a huge amount of money to be spending. They were frustrated that he would make it out as, we can have this or we can have this, and we can't have it both ways. They thought that was unfair.
Hmm. Other highlights, Dana, you want to kick that conversation off about the budget address other than initiated Measure 2? What are some of the other key insight that we gained yesterday?
Sure. Well, the state did not see the revenue that it was expecting to in the first part of this fiscal year. The governor said that's in large part due to farm equipment not being purchased at the rate they expected. Online sellers are not giving their tax dollars back to the state, and it's something South Dakota has been fighting for a little over or just about a year now. They passed a bill this past year that would require different vendors in South Dakota who work online to remit their sales tax earnings to the state, and he said about 100 are doing that now, and that's helpful, but it's not the amount of money they wanted. He also broke down about $22.7 million in one-time expenditures that were kind of interesting that he's throwing into the 2017 fiscal year budget. Among those, replenishing the state's reserves, rainy day funds, spending a fair amount of money, almost $5 million if approved, on the South Dakota Animal Disease and Diagnostic Lab, and just a few other pieces across the state that sound like they're for very needed funding source or programs that very much need the funding.
Seth, let's talk about the concept of reserves and rainy day funds more philosophically than specifically. How important is that to Governor Duvard, and how much do other lawmakers buy into the idea of reserve funds at 10%, and what kind of opposition does he face?
I think it's hugely philosophically important to him. If you recall, when he came in as governor, he was facing, he inherited a budget deficit, and he was very critical at that time of past practices of using, reserves to balance the budget, and that was criticism. Though he never called anybody out by name, it was if you connected the dots, it was criticism of people in his own party and past administrations. So it's been very important to him to have a truly balanced budget, not one that's balanced on the back of reserve funds. And it's been important to him to keep reserve funds in place. So, and I think by and large, the legislature, you know, he has a lot of support in the legislature for that. Obviously, some of the Democrats who are vastly outnumbered would like to see, some more spending in areas of education and things like that, rather than having so much money in reserve. But But, you know, that's been Dugard's approach, and he's been consistent with it, and he's had, he obviously has the numbers and the legislature to go along with him. So,
Dana, I heard Democrats saying yesterday that those rainy day funds or reserve funds was an area that they were considering. Is that, did I hear that correctly? Did you pick up on that as well?
That they were picking up on the rainy day funds, that they were upset about it?
That the Democrats thought maybe that would be a place to tap into for things like IM-22. Did you hear that as well?
Yes. Or, you know. Yes, very much so. I would agree with Seth. I think there was a lot of disappointment among Democrats. They were frustrated that there were only 1% proposed increases to education, to health care. They thought that it would be better to use some of that money that was going into reserves instead to go to those increases. They wanted to make sure teacher pay gets up to the level that it was intended to this past year. It's falling a little bit short of that in the first few months of the sales tax increase. Mm. And they also brought up the topic of Medicaid expansion again. They still think that should be on the table. So.
Yeah.
They were very unhappy, as you can imagine.
Not the best day for them. Seth, I want to talk about Marcy's Law, because as we spend so much time on initiated Measure 22, also there was a constitutional amendment S passed. We're calling it Marcy's Law, Victims' Rights Bill. You've done some work on this. Tell me some of the challenges after Election Day with implementation and interpretation of that.
Well, yeah, it's just been kind of chaotic. As we've seen the last couple days, Attorney General Jackley came out with an official opinion finally saying that, you know, government agencies can release, according to his opinion, the addresses of crimes and some of the crime victim information that they had sort of clamped down on in a sort of a knee-jerk reaction to Marcy's Law, which a lot of people around the state are interpreting as, you know, really restricting what kind of information can be released, and also requiring prosecutors to do a lot more work with consulting with victims. And it's been really interesting because, you know, we have state's attorneys spread all across the state, sheriffs, police chiefs, et cetera, and they're all kind of left to interpret this law because it's new and there's no case law to fall back on, and judges are doing the same. And I've seen, you know, court sessions here in Rapid City that I sat through where in an hour, you know, Marcy's Law will come up 5 or 6 times, and a prosecutor will just kind of wonder aloud, you know, how Marcy's Law should be applied in a certain situation, and the judge will have to make a snap decision, and that's kind of what's happening right now. And it just kind of speaks to this broader issue with these ballot initiatives that you're seeing with IM-22 and Marcy's Law, where these things get passed, and then all of a sudden they take effect right away, and everybody scrambles and tries to figure out, how do we implement this, what does it mean, et cetera. And it does make me wonder why, you know, we don't have a delayed effective date with some of these ballot issues. You know, like in North Dakota, they passed Marcy's Law, but it's not taking effect until tomorrow. In Montana, they passed it, and it's there's some dispute there, I think, but it still hasn't taken effect. And it does make me wonder why we kind of self-impose this scrambling on ourselves with these ballot issues and not make them effective a little later. That's what we're seeing.
What happens next with Marcy's Law, Seth? Are we just sort of waiting for those conversations to be had and things to be sorted out, or is there something official happening?
Yeah, what happens next is everybody continues to apply their own interpretations to the law. We have the Attorney General's opinion, but that's not law. That doesn't carry the force of law. It gives, you know, some people some direction, but, you know, what we'll have to wait for probably is years and years of case law to build up, where in individual cases somebody will challenge the fact that, you know, maybe a victim will say, I didn't get my full rights granted to me, and there'll be a lawsuit or legal challenge over that, or, you know, and we'll just have to wait for that to play out. And as a lot of lawyers have told me, you know, that could take years before we finally figure out exactly what all the provisions of the law mean. And meanwhile, you could have lots of different jurisdictions within the state applying the law differently.
Seth Topper is an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Dana Ferguson is with Argus Leader Media in Sioux Falls. Dana, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me, Lori.